SEC tournament underway in Nashville right now. Day one, Arkansas is not going to play till day three on Friday night, late Friday night, going to be the Razorbacks game against either Texas A&M.
Get your coffee ready.
Oklahoma or South Carolina. I mean, you know, it's like they say this is going to be an 8:30 tip-off.
It's going to be like nine.
All it takes is like one overtime game, or in my experience at the SEC tournament, a tornado, that it just throws the entire day's schedule off.
Yeah, or a few whistle-happy officials sometimes as well.
Being in the Georgia Dome during the tornado is still about the weirdest thing. It's almost surreal, to be honest with you. And that's what I think about every year whenever I think about the SEC tournament. But Anthony Christensen's here with me. He's going to be heading over to Nashville tomorrow as Arkansas is going to play. So it's either going to be Texas A&M. Let's put it this way. Tomorrow night, some point tomorrow night, because it's going to be the late game too, Texas A&M is going to play the winner of tonight's late game between Oklahoma and South Carolina. Arkansas beat all three of those teams during the regular season, beat South Carolina rather handily here.
Yeah, that game
thought they kind of did against Texas A&M too, even though A&M came back and kind of made it a little bit of a close game. OU was that was a nail-biter over there in Norman. We'll see. Darius Acuff looks like he's going to play during the SEC tournament.
Yeah, it seems like it's full go for him after talking to John Calipari yesterday.
A lot to talk about in terms of basketball right now. Let's start here with Darius Acuff being SEC Player of the Year. He is the unanimous Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. Got the award from the AP yesterday. Got the award from the coaches the day before that. Also got the Freshman of the Year award from the coaches too,
and the AP.
Which that's not like he's not the first one who's done that. Like there have been other players who have had. I think was it Brandon
Miller was Brandon the most Miller recent to win both. Yeah.
Well, that's the company you want to keep, isn't it? No comment.
I've got no comment.
But he got both awards. There were a lot of people wondering, hey, is he going to get SEC Player of the Year because he's a freshman? You know, people trying to make maybe more than they should have about those Player of the Week awards during the season when he kept getting SEC Freshman of the Week and didn't get SEC Player of the Week until very late. I think after it was – what did after the 49-point game against Alabama that he finally got
an
SEC
Player
of the Week award. Man, it's been a great season for him, and you always want good guard play in March. Mm-hmm. We talked about this. That's kind of the old adage about tournament time is the teams with the best guards win. Mm-hmm. We said last week that we think maybe it's turned on its head a little bit, and now it's the teams with the best front courts are the ones winning in March, but we'll see how this goes. Certainly for Arkansas, it's good news to have Acuff in the fold for the SEC tournament, and they gave him the day off against Missouri. It went their way. And now, as long as he's not rusty, they got their best player in the fold for Friday night's game.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I wouldn't expect him to be rusty. In speaking with John Calipari both yesterday and after the Missouri game, it seemed like he could have gone if it was, needed. But, obviously it was going into that game. They were already locked into the 2 or 3 seed. And given Alabama was hosting Auburn that night and didn't have to go on the road for that game, it was most likely going to be the 3 seed because Arkansas needed to win and have Auburn beat Alabama. So, and as we know, Coleman Coliseum's a tough place to play and just go and win, as is Neville Arena. So they're the 3 seed, and Darius Acuff got that rest. You like that. If you're with Arkansas and all of that. And yeah, it certainly is big. You want him to be full go, full ready for not just the SEC tournament but the NCAA tournament as well. And yeah, I mean, there's not going to be a lot that can happen that would necessarily hurt Arkansas's NCAA tournament seeding in Nashville. I think they're pretty much guaranteed at this stage of the season, unless they go and get 40 balled by South Carolina.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to fall below the 5 line, but they could rise to the 4 line, or if they're really, really fortunate, maybe even the 3. I would very highly doubt that, but they can get onto that 4 line. So that's really what the SEC tournament is all about for Arkansas State.
I guess that's the question. Can they improve their seed by having if they go 3-0 in Nashville?
Yeah. Yeah. If they go 3-0 in Nashville, I would be pretty stunned if they weren't, on the 4 line.
If they go 0-1 or 1-1, we're thinking probably a 5 or a 6.
I think almost certainly a five. I'd be very surprised if they drop to a six, just with their overall resume, their wins, you know, and a lot of the teams kind of, you know, in the same area.
Don't you think though that the tournament, the NCAA selection committee, they manipulate this thing to give themselves matchups? Because this is a TV show.
Yeah.
Ultimately, this is a TV show, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't just happenstance that Patino and Calipari ended up in Providence.
And Bill Self.
And Bill Self last year.
And Chris Crutchfield.
Okay. But you know what I'm saying? Like the Calipari-Patino thing or the Patino-Self thing, like, I mean, come on. I don't think that's just happenstance that you happen to put.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to create
one hell of a coincidence.
You're trying to create really compelling matchups in the second round and the first round, I think, where you can find them.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, but even then, like, I would be, like I said, very surprised if they fell below the five line, you know, just given where they stand as one of the top five seeds in most projections.
I could see them being a six if it pitted Calipari against somebody potentially in the second round. I could see it.
Maybe. Like, if they go out and they get really beaten, like against, you know, South Carolina is probably, like, if they go out and get really run off the floor by, like, South Carolina.
How about this as a hypothetical? Yeah. A hypothetical. USC has not been good this year.
No.
Right?
No, they're
they've got to win the Big Ten tournament. They got to win the Big Ten tournament. But let's just say they do. And they make
I don't think that's gonna happen.
But let's just say they
no
do.
No disrespect to USC, but
just for fun. Mm-hmm. Let's say they do.
Okay.
And they've got to go to Dayton and win a first four game.
No, if they won the
would they not have to go to Dayton because they wouldn't be one of the last four at large? Okay,
yes,
well then never mind. You know where I'm going here.
I know. Yes.
Like trying to manipulate a matchup based on, you know, history connections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, maybe it would make for good TV, like last year's second round matchup in Providence with Calipari and Patino. That was a lot of fun just to be there for all of the build up and obviously the game itself, even though it wasn't necessarily the best basketball ever played. You know, it was high stakes basketball, which made for the entertainment in that game. But yeah, I mean, that was a lot of fun, and you know, I'm gonna have fun covering the NCAA tournament anyway. But that just kind of gave it a little added flavor, a little sprinkle on there.
All right. So going back to Acuff winning player of the year, a thought that I've had, and I understand, trust me, I get it, why there are all these think pieces, social media graphics, whatever, that tie Acuff back to Derrick Rose, back to John Wall, back to the great, you know, the guards that Calipari has had. I do think that too often in the last couple of weeks, I've seen stuff like that, and I haven't seen enough of, how about let's put Darius Acuff's season in context of Arkansas basketball history.
Yeah,
just not just Calipari basketball history. I mean, he plays for the Razorbacks, too. It's not just, the University of Cal here.
Yeah.
But you look at – so I wanted to kind of put what he's done this season in perspective in terms of, you know, what I've seen from Razorbacks or what other Razorbacks have done here. Mm-hmm. And so I looked this up. These are the other Razorbacks who have won Conference Player of the Year awards. First off, I think you have to remember that Arkansas played the Southwest Conference for a long time.
Yeah.
And so, again, this is something...
like it was yesterday.
Well, this is something that's a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, is that a lot of times when we talk about, you know, Razorback history, whether it be, you know, whatever the sport, it's their conference history in the Southwest Conference does not get mentioned enough. Like we're going to see, I guarantee you, on Friday during the game, you'll see some sort of graphic about Arkansas, and it'll say they've won one conference tournament. Well, that's not right. They've won like seven conference tournaments because they used to dominate the Southwest Conference. I look at the outfield wall at Baum Walker Stadium, and it's got SEC championships and SEC division championships. Well, they won three SWC championships, too, that are not listed on the wall. Mm-hmm. It bothers me when, and I know it bothers the former players, too, when their accomplishments are not...
They're not given the recognition.
They're not recognized because they didn't come in the current conference that they're in. So there's a little...
little history lesson.
Well, just this is setting up for what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
Southwest Conference Players of the Year. Who's through Arkansas had? They had Martin Terry in 1973. If you don't know anything about Martin Terry, know that he's one of the great scorers ever in Razorback history. He put up amazing numbers, and that was before the three-point line. 1978, Ron Brewer was the Southwest Conference Player of the Year. 1979, it was Sidney Moncrief. 1990, Lee Mayberry shared the Conference Player of the Year award. He was a co-player of the year. I'm not sure if that was the coaches. I'm not sure if that was the AP, but he did share one of those. And then in 1991, kind of a unique situation, Todd Day was the Southwest Conference Player of the Year as voted on by the AP. Oliver Miller was the Southwest Conference Player of the Year as voted on by the coaches. So those are the SWC Players of the Year. And then you move to the SEC. Corliss won Player of the Year back-to-back years in 1994 and 1995. He was the unanimous Player of the Year both years, coaches and the AP. Same went for Bobby Portis in 2015. He won both awards. And then Mason Jones was, this was a really weird one, in 2020. He was the, remember, this is the season that,
yeah, that was cut short.
But
yeah.
Well, no, the season wasn't cut short. But the season was cut short.
I was gonna say,
but what I'm saying is, like, the awards came out before COVID shut down the season. Like, these awards came out on Monday, and the season was shut down on like Thursday or something. So there's that. Yep. There's that. Mason Jones was the co-SEC Player of the Year, I think, with Reggie Perry in the AP, and then somebody like totally different. I think it was a Kentucky player. It was one of Cal's guys, and I forget who it was in 2020.
I think 2020. Would that have been an Emmanuel Quickly year?
I don't think so. So like anyway, somebody else won the 2020 SEC Coaches Player of the Year. So in 2020, where I'm going with this was a really unique year in that there were three different players who won SEC Player of the Year awards. To me, what Acuff has done, this is the best season I've seen from a Razorback since Corliss. Mm-hmm. Like this is not to discount anything with Mason Jones or Bobby Portis. I just think that this has been such a dominant, you know, just he dominates.
Yeah.
He dominates every night, it feels like, when he steps on the floor. Even when he's not scoring, he's dishing out 9, 10, 12, 13 assists. Sometimes he's scoring and he's assisting. And you look at the numbers at the end and it's like, well, he scored 30, but then he also had like 8 assists that led to, you know, 20 more points, you know, because some of them were three-pointers. And it's like, well, gosh, he just, you know, he contributed to over half of the scoring just himself. It's amazing what he's done. And the reason I go with Corliss, Portis could affect the – Bobby had a he was able to affect the floor on both sides. Mm-hmm. He really was, and in multiple ways. But I think Acuff affects it more than Portis did. You know, and you go back to Corliss, he was a good rebounder, was a really good scorer. Could play, you know, some defense. You couldn't play on Nolan's teams without playing defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I see from Acuff. I think Acuff has grown as a defender this year. Mm-hmm. And then certainly as a distributor, that's probably been his greatest growth. And then he's become quite the scorer, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, he looks – it almost looks effortless a lot of the times. I mean, I know he's had, like, one or two inefficient games, you know, just from a scoring perspective. But for the most part, it's just like – it looks just almost too easy, you know, just the way he does so many things and just how easy he makes them look. Like, he's doing things that are ridiculously difficult and making them look, you know, very, very simple. You know, he's, you know, I wrote this in one of my stories lately, just like he's, you know, he's a professional among amateurs, right? Like, he's going to be in the NBA next year. Like, I mean, barring something completely unforeseen. And he's going to be hearing his name pretty early.
Like, what would be unforeseen that kept him out of the NBA draft?
Maybe he just really...
The NBA draft getting canceled? I mean, I think that's about all that could...
Well, I mean, you never want to, you know, speak in certainties.
He is as sure of a thing as I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
But, like, in terms of a Razorback going to the NBA?
No, yeah, absolutely. No, I just...
Maybe the highest drafted Razorback... What's the highest drafted Razorback? Do we know?
Not off the top of my head.
I don't know off the top of my head either.
Would it be Anthony Black? He went number 6, I think.
Well, he'd be in the conversation, I guess.
I know.
I could see where Acuff would potentially be.
Maybe it was Sidney Moncrief, because I know the Lakers discussed taking him number 1 overall when they took Magic Johnson.
Moncrief go 4th or 5th?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I know that was a discussion. Because I think some of the people in the Lakers front office were concerned about Magic Johnson being too big for a point guard, which you look back at that now and it's just like people were asking or thinking about basketball players being too big. That's kind of funny.
Here we go.
But
okay. Here's the answer. Joe Klein.
Oh, okay.
And Anthony Black are tied for the highest draft picks. They were both drafted sixth.
Okay. Okay.
So could Acuff go top five?
Yes. I think so.
Even in this draft class?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you look at, I mean, is it going to happen? I don't know. I mean, you look at, I mean, the first two picks, it's almost certainly going to be A.J. DeBanza and Darren Peterson in some sort of order. I mean, one, two, either way. And then you look at number three, and I mean, there's so many good players in this draft class. I mean, you know, Cameron Boozer at Duke, you know, Keaton Wagler at Illinois, Kingston Flemings at Houston. I mean, the list just keeps going on and on. But I mean, he's certainly up there, just kind of in that mix. You know, does he go in the top five? I'm not certain. Some of it's going to be situation based. You know, I mean, maybe some of it's going to be situation based. I know a lot of times when you're that high, you take best available just overall player and not necessarily drafting for fit. But yeah, I think there's, you know, absolutely a world in which, you know, he goes, you know, top five, you know, maybe even top three if things go his way. So yeah, I think there's, yeah, certainly a chance that happens. And I know I'm just forgetting a ton of players just off the top of my head, but yeah, there's a lot of players who can stake their claim, and I think he's absolutely among them.
Here, just for comparison's sake here. So this is what Acuff did this year versus what past SEC Player of the Years have done for Arkansas. And keep in mind that we're talking about an incomplete data set here with Acuff. Mm-hmm. The others, it does include their postseason games. So Acuff right now, 22.2 points per game. He's averaging 3 rebounds a game. He's got 193 assists to 60 turnovers, 23 steals, and 11 blocks. You look at Mason Jones in 2020, he averaged 22 points per game. I thought he was like there have not been very many scorers who got on the kind of role that Mason Jones got on in the last month or two of that 2020 season. So he actually averaged less per game, though, by 0.2 as of right now, than Acuff is averaging. 5.5 rebounds per game for Mason, 106 assists to 99 turnovers. So that's a lot of turnovers, 6 blocks and 50 steals for him that year. You look at Bobby Portis in 2014-15. This was his stat line, 17.5 points per game, 8.9 rebounds per game. He had 42 assists, 56 turnovers, 50 blocks, and 39 steals. And then Corliss, who, you know, just for my money, I think, you know, the back-to-back years that he put together in 93-94, 94-95, I think those are the best years that we've ever seen from a Razorback in the SEC. But for him, in 93-94, so this would have been the championship year, 20.4 points, 7.7 rebounds. He had 74 assists, 90 turnovers. It's kind of surprising he had that many turnovers in the post. 39 blocks, 39 steals. The next year, a little lower scoring, 19.7, and a little lower rebounding, 7.5 rebounds per game. But the other numbers were up, 89 assists, 92 turnovers, 33 blocks, and 67 steals. So he had 67 steals out of the post his junior season. like to me, Corliss has always been the standard when you're talking about a Razorback in the SEC. And, you know, now you're talking about Acuff. Does he reach that standard? It might be determined in, like, how this season ends up. You know, I mean, are they cutting down the nets in Indianapolis? I would be surprised if they are.
I would also be surprised.
But if they do, you're talking about him in the same breath, I think, that we talk about Corliss Williamson all these years later.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, when you – yeah, and like you said, I would be quite surprised if that ended up being the case, it, you know, happening in Indianapolis. But, I mean, just from an individual standpoint, I mean, you look at just how good Darius Acuff has been – you know, from the jump, really. I mean, you know, I think he scored 21 points in his first game against Southern, and we don't even really think about that game.
Well, we both scored a point against Southern that night. Right?
I have 0 points in my college basketball career, unfortunately. 2 goals in my college soccer career.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, but I mean, just the way he does everything, the way he gets his teammates involved, the way, even when he's not scoring or even when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he's still a presence. He's still somebody who, you know, needs to be guarded very closely, because you give him an inch of space, he's going to make the most of it, because he's just that good. And you know, college basketball is oftentimes thought to be more difficult to score in than NBA basketball, just because of the spacing is different and all of that. So, and that's not me saying he's going to average 22 points in the NBA by any means, but yeah, it's just, he's just been incredible. My AP All-American ballot was due, today, but I submitted it yesterday, and I always try to make sure that I want to make sure there's like zero semblance of bias in anything I do with regard to, teams I have, any sort of connection.
You put
Acuff
on it, right?
I put him on my first team.
Because we would just end the show right now if you didn't.
Yeah, no, I put him in my AP All-American first team, and I didn't even have a second thought about it, and that's despite me always, in a self-critical way, I sometimes think I'm thinking too much about potential bias, because of how it took me like 4 weeks to put St. Louis on my AP ballot because I'm from St. Louis, and I didn't want people to be like, you're only voting for him because you're from St. Louis. And I'm like, no, I think they're actually really good. But that's all to say, he's just been incredible, and there's just very little else to say because of how good he's been.
Hey, we want to tell you, when it comes to game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eggland's Best delivers more the nutrition you need with 6 times more vitamin D, 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eggland's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Eggland'sBest.com. You got this OU South Carolina game tonight in Nashville. Winner plays A&M tomorrow. Let's start with the game tonight. How do you think this goes down between OU and South Carolina?
I think it's probably going to be Oklahoma. I mean, you look at how well Oklahoma has played recently.
Like they've gotten on a little bit of a roll toward the end. I mean, not great, but what were they, 1-6, 1-7 when Arkansas left there?
They were, one and seven. Okay, after the Arkansas game.
And so they finished at 7-11. So yes, that means they won 6 of 10.
Yeah, no, they've played really well, especially of late. They've won 6 of their past 8, I want to say.
Okay.
And, I mean, they've beaten some decent teams. I mean, Vanderbilt's obviously going to be in the field. They got that win on the road. They beat Georgia, who is most likely going to be in the field. They beat Auburn. Auburn stinks and still might end up in the field.
Over Miami of Ohio?
No, Miami, Ohio is in. Let's not, Miami, Ohio is, if you... Miami, Ohio is in and should be in. Beat Auburn, beat Missouri, which is probably going to be in the field, beat Texas, which is probably going to be in the field. So Oklahoma's been, one of the hotter teams in the SEC of late, so.
They won at Texas at the end of the regular season. That was a pretty good win for them.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, I mean, they've played really well, and South Carolina has not, so. I mean, they beat Ole Miss to end the season, but South Carolina dropped, I think it's like 9 of its last 11 games or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would think, just based on, recent form, that, Oklahoma would be the favorite in that game. And, Oklahoma lost to South Carolina this season, but that's when they were really going through it, and it was also on the road. But, I mean, you can throw out a lot of stuff in this conference. Conference tournament season comes around. Like, I mean, Gardner Webb had one Division One win and then went out and beat South Carolina upstate in its first conference tournament game there in the Big South. So obviously that's not the same thing, but it goes to show that a lot can happen in conference tournament play. But I just think, if you're making me pick a favorite for this game tonight, I think it's going to be Oklahoma, and I'll be up late watching it. So
okay, so let's assume OU wins. They play A&M tomorrow. How do you forecast that game?
That would be a really interesting one. I mean, you look at, A&M, has kind of limped a little bit to close, or not really necessarily to close. I mean, they won 4 of their final 6 games of the regular season, but they went on that 4-game slide, so that was a little bit of a rough stretch. But, I mean, A&M with, just how up-tempo and just the full-court pressure that they play with, I could see that causing a lot of problems for a team with some, heavy legs, having played late the night before. So on paper, you'd probably lean towards A&M, even with as well as Oklahoma has played of late. You know, so and I think they split a regular season series. I don't remember if Oklahoma actually beat them. No, they didn't. They beat Oklahoma, and yeah. So I lean A&M.
You talk about A&M getting into your legs. Mm-hmm. I feel like Arkansas gets A&M, assuming that's the matchup Friday night, at the best time you could play A&M in the tournament. Because they would be the tired team that night. It's a whole different deal if you're playing A&M and they're trying to get into your legs when you're playing, you know, on a second or a third consecutive day, as opposed to they're playing their second consecutive and you've had a week off.
Yeah, yeah. And then, I mean, you could also flip it. I mean, maybe having the full week off makes Arkansas rusty, and maybe A&M having played the night before, maybe they're more sharp.
I think there's something to that.
In game environment or game situations. So
I think I think there's something to having played a game in that venue, in that setting.
Yeah.
That gives you – it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win, but I think sometimes you do see the teams that have played the day before and you've got the team that's coming off a bye. Mm-hmm. You see the teams that have played the day before, like they'll get off to a good start. Maybe they'll have a good first 4 or 8 minutes, something like that, and then maybe things will normalize and the other team pulls away and wins. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like a lot of times you do see that where there is at least an initial
little bump.
An initial.
Yeah, especially with a conference tournament venue like the one in Nashville. I mean, Bridgestone Arena is primarily a hockey arena. Yeah, that's where the Nashville Predators play. So the seating is different than a basketball arena. So your eyes kind of have to adjust a little bit to it. There's like a whole science behind it, and I find it really, really interesting. I've read about it.
Well, it's also cold.
That too.
And it can create the court. Be a little bit slick too, because of the ice underneath.
Yeah, so I mean, there's that, and it could play a factor in that regard. But obviously, I mean, Arkansas is going to be the favorite team in that game. I don't know, how much making predictions and all that. But I think all of those are factors. But I've always found the depth perception of basketball courts it played in like hockey or football stadiums. Once you get to the Final Four, I've always found that fascinating because I read something about that a while ago, and just like, especially if you're a team like that makes a miracle run to the Final Four, and you go from playing in your 5,000 seat arena to a football stadium, like it like messes with your eyes, like it just the depth perception. So it's very interesting. I highly recommend reading.
There's something to be said for a shooting backdrop.
Yes, absolutely.
Like that's something that I've heard players talk about when they go down to North Little Rock and they play at whatever the arena's named now. First
Simmons Bank, I think.
There you go. Almost said the wrong bank. when they go there, again, that was an arena that was built for concerts and hockey and arena football. Now, they played some basketball in there, too. UALR played their games there for a little while. There were some state tournament games there. But it's not a basketball-specific arena. Mm-hmm. And I've heard from players who have gone down there and played in that arena, like, and you look at their scores when they play down there, it's a lot of lower scoring games.
Yeah.
I think there is something to that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. It's a very fascinating subject. I'm a dork. So I'll read stuff like that all the time. I'm a nerd, but yeah, no, it's really interesting. Kentucky's about to beat LSU. So Kentucky's going to move on. That'll be Kentucky versus Missouri tomorrow. So that'll be an interesting matchup, but the backdrops I've always found really, really fascinating.
Well, it's just a nerd. It's weird to me that so many of these games at the most important time of the year are put in non-basketball arenas.
Yeah,
because it happens a lot.
Yeah, like
Big 12 plays at what's it called? The T-Mobile Center now?
T-Mobile Center, yeah.
I almost said the wrong phone carrier. I'm off my game here today. The names of the stadiums are changing too fast.
Like, I think that's another hockey arena or hockey concert.
Yeah.
I want to say there's a minor league hockey
Final
team
Four is played center? In an NFL stadium every year.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's, yeah. yeah.
Well, I want to tell you real quick about Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. Choose Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. As we were talking about Darius Acuff's SEC Player of the Year, I forgot to mention that Malik Thomas made the All-SEC Freshman Team, mm-hmm. and Billy Richmond made the All-SEC Defensive Team.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, both well deserved. Like I, you know, if you didn't vote for Malik Thomas on the all freshman team, I think I would just say you probably forgot about him. Hmm. Maybe I don't know how you'd let that happen. But
he scored 30 the other day against Missouri.
Yes, he did.
And it was 28 in the initial box score.
Yes,
they went back and they fixed. Explain what happened. It was something mix-up between he and Trevin Brazil.
Yeah, they credited a basket in the first half to Trevin Brazil. I believe it was at the 6-minute mark. Hmm. They credited to Trevin Brazil when it was actually Malik Thomas who had scored the basket, and that was So they went in and corrected that, and that meant I had to go into my stories and correct that as well. Hmm. He was exceptional against Missouri, and they really needed him to be without Darius Acuff. And he was really really good, and. He's another one who, you know, if he, you know, keeps up that kind of scoring form, and he told me after that game, like, you know, that was the kind of performance he needed going into the postseason. You know, that's, you know, he's another guy who could be, you know, a big factor in, you know, how far Arkansas can go in the postseason, be that, you know, him, you know, playing well or playing poorly and mm-hmm. things go awry early, or, you know, he plays well and they go on a run. So, yeah, him, and then Billy Richmond being on all defensive team. That's another one that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, that's just kind of been. I mean, when you talked about Billy Richmond entering, you know, his freshman season, that's what, you know, recruiting people and, you know, analysts would tell you is just like, yeah, he's a guy who immediately you're going to be able to sub in and, you know, have defend the other team's best player, and, you know, he's going to be capable of doing that, and, you know, I think that you've seen that. You know, a lot this year, and, you know, even beyond, obviously we're talking about his defensive game because he was all defensive team, but then the offensive game has really come along as well. So yeah, both well deserving in my eyes.
Here's why Malik scoring 30 catches my eye, because before this year there just were not a whole lot of players, a lot of freshmen at Arkansas who had scored 30 in a game. Here's the entire list before this season. You had Bobby Portis with 35 against Alabama in 2014. Thurman did it twice his freshman year against Missouri and Ole Miss when he scored 34. Isaiah Joe scored 34 his freshman year against Florida International. George Cook in 1945 scored 32 against Texas A&M. How could you forget?
You remember that game?
No. And B.J. Young did it against Florida in 2012. Joe Johnson did it against Mississippi State in 2000. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times that it had happened prior to this year. It happened 4 times this year. Acuff did it 3 times, and Thomas did it once. And, again, the season's not over. Mm-hmm. And you think about both of them. Think about all the times that Acuff and Thomas scored, like, 28 and 29 points. Like, got right up there to that. Like, there were 3 or 4 games this year where I actually had this note ready to go for a game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember a game, Malik Thomas, he was out to, like, 26 points with – like 9 minutes left in the game, and it's like, okay,
James Madison.
He's going to for sure do this, and then he didn't score again the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. Both of them have gotten awfully close to this. It just kind of goes to show you that we've never really seen, certainly we've never seen this with two players at the same time who can mm-hmm. score this way, who are freshmen.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've been really good, really, really good. So, yeah, I mean, you said it. I mean, they're doing things that people just haven't done before, and I mean, that's a credit to them, that's a credit to, you know, the, you know, recruiting for getting those kind of guys in, and I also think that both of them have improved quite clearly throughout the season, so I think that's a credit to, you know, everybody involved in all of that. So yeah, I mean, that's just, yeah, it's been a very impressive season for both of those guys, and yeah, I think that you see, you know, why they were so highly touted coming out of high school, and Kentucky LSU just went final 87-82.
By the way, that was Emmanuel Quickly in 2020.
Did I get it?
You got it right.
Oh,
you got
come
it right.
On, mess with me. Yeah. Let's go. Ball knowledge overload.
While we were talking, I got an email from the Razorbacks. It's one of these that they put out. They send it to media members who are voting for awards, and you know, this is why you should vote for your guy. I took a class in college.
I've been getting those.
I took a class in college, and the professor, it was about basically sports information, which is you know, the old term for what is now communications, media relations, whatever you call it. The story was that Carl Malone, when he was at Louisiana Tech, broke a backboard. And what they did was when they swept up the glass, they actually took it and put it in like little individual containers. And they sent it out to media members. And it came with a note that said, special delivery, courtesy, the mailman.
That's pretty good marketing.
It was great marketing because, you know, it's like, okay, now you remember this guy. But it was their way to market him for these National Player of the Year, All-America type awards.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to get into all of the Carl Malone stuff outside of basketball, but that is pretty. That's clever. That's good marketing and stuff.
The reason I was mentioning this email,
campaigning.
These are just a few things that they mentioned in here that, you know, they're just kind of interesting. Acuff is the third player to win SEC Player and Freshman of the Year. The others are Brandon Miller, who we mentioned earlier at Alabama in 2023. The other one, do you know?
I'm sorry, what was the question again? I just got the same email.
There's only three players. Well, don't look at the answer.
I'm not looking.
Three players in the history of the SEC who have won SEC Player of the Year and Freshman of the Year in the same year. Acuff, Miller, and...
John Wall?
Anthony Davis.
Oh!
In 2012.
Dang it!
And
I should have got... That's. I'm ashamed.
This is one thing, you know, and this is another bullet point here that's kind of interesting to me. And I've heard this mentioned a lot, how Acuff has got a chance to join Pete Maravich as the only players in SEC history to lead the league in scoring and assists for the entire season. Maravich averaged 44.5 points and 6.2 assists in 1969-70.
That's not bad.
No.
I know.
That's without the three-point line, by the way.
Yeah, Pete. Pistol Pete, man. He was – I mean, I wasn't around to watch, but – I mean – I read about you just read about Pete Maravich games, and it's just like the most it's kind of like reading about Wilt on some level.
Well, have you ever watched the Maravich highlight videos?
Yeah.
So when I was in, maybe your coach was like this too. When I was in junior high basketball, our coach would actually, you know, like, we'd go in the gym, they'd turn out the lights. You know, every classroom had to have one of those. I don't know if it was like this when you were in school, but when I was in school,
little projector screens.
No, when I was in school, every classroom had like this cart with wheels on it, and they had a TV on top of it.
Oh yeah,
that was literally strapped down.
Yeah,
so the TV wouldn't fall off. And so, you know, they turn out the lights in the gym, they roll in the mandatory TV for that classroom. And they put on Pete Maravich highlights. And it's like, if you want to be a good basketball player, this is who you need to emulate.
Here's Pete Maravich.
I don't know if they used the word emulate in seventh grade, but they might have.
Yeah.
That was the gist of what we were being told.
Yeah. Yeah. I
mean, and his highlights are unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know,
crazy.
He's throwing underhanded passes from 80 feet and hitting a guy in stride right underneath the basket.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
No, he. Yeah. I mean, just crazy.
Yeah. It's
like, yeah.
All right,
to Pistol Pete.
Arkansas, we don't know who they're going to play. Anthony's going to be in Nashville. You can follow his coverage at wholehogsports.com all throughout the week. We'll have Bubba Carpenter back here in studio tomorrow. We're going to have Mark Etheridge from D1 Baseball join us. He'll help give us a preview of Mississippi State, the series at Baum Walker this weekend. The Razorbacks are number 6. The Bulldogs are number 3. Big series, this open SEC play over at Baum this weekend. Got a ton of stuff going on, so hope that you come to our website to read all about it. Got basketball, mentioned baseball, NCAA track indoor championships are this weekend. You got softball back
gymnastics.
In SEC action. It's kind of nutty around here, to be honest with you.
Nobody knows what day it is.
No.
That's just a normal week.
I'm struggling with the month and the day of the month, too, to be honest with you.
I don't even know what year it is.
But you can read all about that at our website, wholehogsports.com. Appreciate you being with us. Hope to see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.